Hour number three of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio, where I have to sit in this studio for the next 120 minutes. And quite frankly, I'm very annoyed still at Hot Take Hickey. I can't look at Hot Take Hickey. I don't even want to be associated with Hot Take Hickey anymore, because earlier in the program, we were discussing with Jared Greenberg, who was the celebrity at the Garden last night where your jaw hit the floor and it was like, wow, I can't believe that person's in the building. And Jared Greenberg correctly answered, Jessica Alba. Then I go to Hickey and he's like, oh, I can't really crush Sauce Gardner, who didn't know who Jessica Alba was. And I said, what do you mean? It's because he's younger. He's like, no, she didn't look as great as she once did. And I was like, what? And Hickey failed to realize that Sauce Gardner just didn't even know who she was. So the fact that Hot Take Hickey is criticizing Jessica Alba and is saying that Jessica Alba is not as great as she once was is the dumbest, and I mean the dumbest take, as I said earlier, that I've ever heard on CBS Sports Radio. That is bad. Like, for you, we go through tiers of your bad takes. Like, you know, Kyle Brandt did the tiers of his quarterbacks in the AFC. That is the tier one worst take that you've ever had.
Sometimes it takes a brave man to tell the truth.
No.
And today I am that brave man.
No, you're not. You're just an idiot. All right, let's update you on some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. Hickey, I hate that I even have to say your name anymore right now. Take it away. Hit it.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Let's start off with LeBron James. I'm sure LeBron James predicted exactly right before the game that Anthony Davis was going to have a huge night, because LeBron James is always very clairvoyant in his prediction, and I'm sure LeBron wrote down before the game that Anthony Davis was going to have 30 points, 23 rebounds, and also 4 blocks. Lakers take game one, 117-112. LeBron James says AD put on a historical performance.
The Lakers franchise over the years, over the course of their existence, has always had dominant big men and dominant guys that have been a force at the rim. And, you know, that's why their jerseys are in the rafters. And AD will be up there when he's done playing. You know, the number three will be up in the rafters.
So that's one thing to say, that one day Anthony Davis's jersey is going to be in the rafters. Right now, though, has he done enough to already put that jersey up in the rafter? Like, he did win a championship with the Lakers. He's been there since 2019. We all know if LeBron retires tomorrow, his jersey's going up in the rafters with the Los Angeles Lakers. For AD, I got to see him either win another championship, or he's probably got to play there for like another 5 years for that to happen. Because unfortunately, when you look at his time there, I feel like we talk more so about Anthony Davis not being on the court than moments that he's provided on the court, where he's still a great player in this league when he's healthy, as you saw by last night. But there's a lot of times where we're talking about him not being available when the team really does need him.
Yeah, I think he has to, not maybe not a lot more, but he has, I think, a lot of work to do in terms of getting his number retired. It's not the Yankees or the Celtics that retire anyone that plays more than a year for them. Like, they have 7 players retired. That's it. 8 numbers, because Kobe's 8 and 24 are retired,
gotcha,
both. But it's only, like, for how storied the Lakers'
sacred
history is, it's just 7 players. And I think bare minimum, you're right. Another championship, stay healthy, be that dominant force, but otherwise, right now, I don't think he's done enough.
You do agree, though, that without a doubt, LeBron will be put up there. You think that's a discussion?
I do. Is he like...
He's the second greatest player of all time.
No. I get that. And in Cleveland, it's going up, and I don't think it's gone up already, because I know the Heat are kind of quick to do things. I don't think it's got... it's definitely not gone up in Miami.
Well, definitely
LA... I would say no.
Okay. Tier two of one of Hot Take Hickey's worst takes of all time. Jessica Alba was one. That may be two. He's LeBron James. anywhere he goes, anywhere he plays, doesn't matter if it's a year, doesn't matter if it's 18 years, he will find a way to have his number put up on the rafters. That will happen. And he's won a championship there. I guarantee you his number will get retired. They just, I know Pau Gasol won two championships. They just put Pau Gasol's number up there.
Right, but that's a guy that you associate a ton with the Lakers at success. Like, LeBron is
everywhere. When you look back at the Lakers championships, I'm talking about since 2000, you think of two names and two names only. You think of Kobe Bryant and you think Shaquille O'Neal. And I know, right, Kobe won two championships after Shaq left. Those teams are associated with Kobe, not any. I'm not saying that you're saying it's only Pau Gasol, but I still think of just Kobe Bryant.
But it was like a 1-2 punch of Kobe and Pau. Like, if LeBron, let's just say next year, goes to the Mavericks and plays at a, like he's playing right now, are they retiring number six in Dallas?
If he wins a championship, yeah. He won a championship in Los Angeles.
I get that. His number will get put up there. I don't think that means automatically you're tired number just because you won a championship.
And you're also the second greatest player of all time. His number will be up.
Right, but in Cleveland you could do that because he's been there a while. Like, just being the second greatest player of all time doesn't mean you could retire their number just because they played there for a
short, absolutely does.
Short stint. Did the Wizards retire Michael Jordan?
I don't know the answer to that. But
nor should they.
But he didn't win a championship. LeBron has won a championship. LeBron has won a championship in Los Angeles. His number, I guarantee you, will get retired. And also, even if you don't think it should, just from let's get people in the building one night, if the team's ever bad, okay, we're going to retire LeBron James's number and bring a bunch of people back. That will get a full sellout. I guarantee you.
Well, Lakers don't need help drawing fans.
I will put all, if the team stinks in like 5-6 years
it's
or something
like the Knicks,
like that,
people go. It's an event.
I will put all my money in my bank account that the Lakers retire LeBron James's number. There is no, that is how confident I am.
I hope for your sake you're right, because I don't want to see you on the streets.
The fact that you're saying I'm going to be wrong makes me feel good about it. Okay? Like, I feel even better. I may take out a loan and ask if I can double down what's on my bank account just because I know LeBron's number will get retired. LeBron James says the team didn't panic during the Warriors' late 14-0 run to take the lead.
I mean, that's been us since we, since we made the acquisitions to our new guys. We've been able to be very resilient in games. Like I said, we've been playing playoff basketball for about 2.5 months now, just trying to, you know, punch our clock in to be able to play right now in the postseason.
Let's hear from Darvin Ham. He talks about on why he played Anthony Davis for the entire second half.
This is what load management is about. If there's going to be load management, then we have to manage their loads throughout the regular season in order for us to push them a little further during this time of year. Postseason, you know, everything is at its peak. You have to pare down your rotation, excuse me, and you got to, you know, push your big dogs. Your big dogs got to be there early and often.
I love that answer for Darvin Ham, because all we hear about Hickey is load management during the regular season and giving guys nights off. Because it's expected in the postseason that guys are going to go all out. You never really hear about load management in the postseason. And he's obviously asked about the minutes AD played in the question. And he's just like, well, guys, this is why we do load management. I absolutely love that answer from Darvin Ham. Let's go to Steph Curry. And if he thought the Jordan Poole shot at the end of the game was a good one.
For sure. I know he made 6 of them tonight. And we talked about a little bit about certain adjustments we need to make throughout the course of the game to keep creating good looks. But it was decisive. It was, you know, a shot he was open and flowing. Considering how they guard us on that possession, you know, trapping me at the half court, Draymond swinging it over to him, it's kind of in rhythm shot. You know, I'm sure he felt pretty good about it. That's why he shot it. There's no kind of, you know, regrets on that. It's just, you know, make or miss type situation. A lot of trust in him and his ability to put the ball in the basket.
Let's go through all these, and then I'll give you my response to them. Draymond Green defends Jordan Poole. This courtesy of the volume.
Quite frankly, I like the shot. You know, you obviously, you know, you tell him to eat up the space and take three a little bit closer, as there was, you know, he could have eaten up the space, but Jordan can shoot the ball, and he got a good look at it. Yes, you want him to take a couple steps in and get an even closer three, but Jordan taking that three is not why we lost that game.
And finally, let's hear from the coach, Steve Kerr, defend Jordan Poole's shot.
Jordan was wide open and pretty good look. And, that's a shot he can hit. So really, happy with that possession. And again, this, Jordan had hit six threes already. So it's a great shot for us.
Here's my take on it. If you go back and you watch the play, when Jordan Poole gets the ball, it's a little under 11 seconds left. Steph Curry is still right at the half court line. If Steph Curry is cutting and running, maybe you make the case, go get the ball back to Steph Curry. You could obviously make the case that he should be standing closer to the three-point line. But when they make him that pass, and it was great defense by the Lakers because Steph had to toss the ball to Draymond because, as Stan Van Gundy said, it was ABC, anybody but Curry. Jordan Poole's wide open. The Warriors live and die off long three-point shots. He was 6-10 before that. Would you like a better shot? Sure, but I can't crush him for taking that shot. Even though I wanted to see Steph get the shot, let's be real about it. He passed up the ball. He made the right play. And you get it to Jordan Poole. I can't kill Jordan Poole for taking that shot in that moment. It didn't hit. Would you like a better shot? Yes. But that's what was given to you. And shooters got to shoot, and you got to shoot that there, Hickey.
I'm with you 100%. Like, that's the thing. Anyone criticizing the shot, what else do you want him to do? It's open. It's a shot he's made before. There's not a lot of time left. They double team Steph Curry, so in no way were the Lakers allowing Steph Curry to even get an opportunity to take a shot. It was an open shot from a guy who made six threes in the game. I think you take your chances there compared to doing anything else.
Let's go to Tom Thibodeau, who credits Jalen Brunson for bouncing back in game two.
That's who he is. You know, great leader, great toughness. He never disappoints you. You know, sometimes we can fall short, but there's no quitting him. Never quits on a play. So can't say enough about that. Keeps everyone connected.
And let's go to Julius Randle at a big night. Says the Knicks knew the Heat were going to be tough without Jimmy Butler.
Their best players out. They were kind of playing with a what do we have to lose mentality. They already got the first game. And, you know, I was telling the guys from the beginning, you know, it's going to be a battle. You know, no matter what, it's going to be a battle. And, you know, shout out to the guys. Everybody stepped up, did their part.
It's weird that you have a moral victory in the playoffs. But if I'm the Heat, that's kind of like a, not that you needed it, but it's kind of like a moral victory last night. You're up 1-0. You're without Jimmy Butler. You had a shot to win the game, right? It was close. It was competitive. And you just didn't find a way to win. You're going back to Miami now on this ridiculous long layoff of till Saturday. So you go Tuesday to Saturday without having a game until Saturday when they do play in the afternoon. It's like, I look at that. If I'm the Heat, I feel okay with what's happened to the first two games. As long as Jimmy Butler is healthy, I'm looking at the Knicks as they could win this series and win this series easily just as long as Butler's healthy, because Butler wasn't there last night and the Knicks still struggled in the contest.
Right. If you're the Heat, you feel probably as good as you possibly could feel right now about a team going back home with the series tied 1-1.
Let's go to Eric Spoelstra, who coached his ass off last night, and he is a tremendous coach. He says he liked his team's effort without Jimmy Butler.
Got to do whatever you have to do. You know, each game is its own deal. I love the way the guys were playing. You know, on both ends of the court, I thought everybody really competed. I think we did everything we needed to do to give ourselves a chance to win.
He's a great coach. And you know what? I would love to see that team. I don't think they're winning a championship this year. I know they went back to the finals one time without LeBron James. But you look at Spo with the two championships that he got and then what he's been able to do afterwards, and you look at Jimmy Butler, who's definitely deserving of a championship. I would love to see him win a championship without that big three of LeBron, Wade, and Bosh, because this guy has kind of knocked off that stigma that was there early on, that the only reason he won those championships was because of the players around him. Like, he has proved, even without winning a championship, that he's still been a very successful coach.
You said it before that both the Celtics and Sixers, whoever wins that series, should root to play the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals over the Heat.
Yeah.
I think you're right in large part because the Heat, even though they have less talent, they play a style that they drag you in to their side of the pool and
they
play that style. They muck it up. It's ugly. And you still might win the game and the series, but you're going to win on their terms.
It's going to be a battle.
And you rarely see teams, even with lesser talent, be able to dictate the pace and the style of the game throughout the entirety of the series.
You know what would actually be kind of perfect? If Damian Lillard went to Miami. Because Dame's a guy that doesn't have a championship that you root for to one day win a championship. Spo's a guy that has the titles but hasn't got the credit when he won the titles. And Jimmy Butler is more than deserving of winning a title. If you put Jimmy Butler, Dame on the same team coached by Spo, that would be like a Zach Gelb dream team of three guys that I'd be very content with seeing winning an NBA championship.
That party scene would be incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, Spo's won some, but like I said, to win kind of on your own, Jimmy getting his first, Dame getting over the hump and getting one, those guys would be partying for a while.
It'd be the most important championship for Spoelstra.
Oh, yeah.
Without a
doubt. Absolutely. Just like Curry's last year was, you know, equivalent for him, right?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right on that. By the way, this Hurricanes-Devils game, it's now 3-1. The Devils just scored, but the Hurricanes are up 3-1 in this game, and I think Schmid was pulled in this game I just saw. He's only faced 11 shots or 10 shots, and the Hurricanes scored 3 goals. Isn't that the most classic Ranger thing? Hurricanes, who are a very good team, as we know. The Rangers have so much firepower. They've been dealing with injuries to Hurricanes as well. And when you test the goalie, look what happens. And the Rangers weren't able to test the goalie up against Schmid. And that's why they lost that series.
Pucks on net.
Yeah.
Come playoff time.
Hey, it's the first smart thing I actually said tonight. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
You can think of Riley Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. So Randall Cobb, least surprising news ever, is heading to the New York Jets. And Hickey, here's what I don't get. I see like a lot of people freaking out about this today. And maybe it's because of the fact that Rodgers tried to tell everyone on McAfee's show that there was no parameters and there was no like writer items that he had that he needed in order to go onto the Jets when those names were coming on out there. So maybe that's part of it, that there are some people in the media that just get tired of the shtick with Aaron Rodgers and they want to kind of call him out on his BS. But I don't have a problem with Randall Cobb being on the New York Jets. He's not a top three wide receiver on that roster. Yeah, he'll get some reps. But if Aaron Rodgers wants you on the team, you know what you're signing up for. So if Rodgers says, I'm going to the New York Jets, but I'll only go there if you sign Randall Cobb, you got to make your quarterback healthy and you know, happy. And also, Cobb could be a resource because he is a good a locker room guy. And you have a younger wide receiving core as well. And also, with it up in the air on how many times Rodgers is going to be attending these practices. Like, I know at the press conference, he said he expects to be there for all the offseason program. Then on McAfee the other day, he's like, oh, I'll be there for half of it. If Randall Cobb goes there, he knows the offense, right? He knows Nathaniel Hackett better than anybody. He could kind of tell those wide receivers, this is what Aaron is going to expect out of you, because there's really not many people that are still playing, if anyone in the NFL, that is as close with Aaron Rodgers as Randall Cobb is.
If you're freaking out about Randall Cobb getting a one-year deal to the Jets, get a life. Like, honestly, get a life.
I love that.
What do we? He's not going to see the field. If he does, it's going to be, he's going to like 20 catches on the year.
He had 34 last year in Green Bay.
And there you go. And you're in a better wide receiver room now in New York than you were last year in Green Bay.
417 receiving yards last year for Randall Cobb.
Not a bad average. Not a bad average. But it's like, what is he?
That's a lot better than what I expected from Randall Cobb, the way that I remember him last year.
How many touchdowns? How many times did he get in the end zone?
Oh, do you have to ruin what was a good story?
Zero.
One time.
I already got in there.
He got in there one time.
All right. So there's
And he only played in 13 games.
But it's like he's putting Garrett Wilson on the bench.
It's 12.3 yards per catch. That's pretty damn good.
Taking reps away from Alan Lazard. It's Rodgers' friend. He wants to have him in a new city. Okay. Who cares?
I know that you're very critical of Rodgers, and I feel like Hickey is rooting against Rodgers in New York. Here's what, you don't agree with that assessment?
I wouldn't say rooting against him.
I'm rooting for this to be a disaster.
To be right, and I don't think it's going to work the way Jets fans think it will. So I'm more rooting for me selfishly than I'm rooting for or rooting against, we'll say, Rodgers.
When you say you don't think it's going to work, to what level? Because I know that there is some Super Bowl chatter, and if you're a Jet fan, you should have that chatter. But I think the realistic person expects the Jets to probably finish second place in the AFC East, make the playoffs as a wild card team, and then be a tough outcome postseason time with a good defense and a quarterback that is by far and away, from a skill standpoint, the best quarterback that this organization, even at his age, has ever had.
I mean, I think in 2 years, you can hope for one playoff win. That's what I would say. And it's not like I'm being overly negative. You're right. That's probably around the ballpark of what people are expecting. But the reality is, if you're the Jets, you're getting Aaron Rodgers. It truly is, even if you don't think they can get there, Super Bowl or bust. You go all in for Rodgers at his age, still what he has left in the tank. Anything short of a Super Bowl is a disappointment.
How many teams do you have to select before you say the Jets could get to the Super Bowl in the AFC? Because I will say this about Rodgers. And I said this before, I don't think he's won a Super Bowl in New York. Because he had a better situation in terms of not the roster, but an easier road in the NFC. And they were 13-3. We've gone through this like almost every single day. So I'll kind of condense it. And his offense did not play well in that NFC title game with opportunities to go take the lead up against the Bucs and against the 49ers in the division around at home. They were embarrassing. So, like, the Chiefs, obviously, more of a Super Bowl contender than the Packers. The Bengals, more of a Super Bowl contender than the Packers. I mean, than the Jets, excuse me. When you go past those two teams, who are the other teams that you throw in there? Like, I would still say Buffalo right now.
Buffalo, to me, absolutely. I would put the Jaguars, to me, as a team that's more likely to go to the Super Bowl over the Jets. I'll put the Chargers in that category as well.
Really?
More likely to go to... Now, I don't think they're going to the Super Bowl, the Chargers. But if you're telling me one of the two, let's just say we're living in this fantasy world, next year I can guarantee one of the two teams going to the Super Bowl, who would your guess be is more likely? I would say be the Chargers over the Jets. So that's five teams right there. So if you're talking about the Jets being the sixth team in the AFC, or even fifth, if you think I'm crazy with the Jaguars, with the Chargers, so the fifth team in the AFC is not exactly a reason to be excited.
I put them at four. Chiefs 1, Bengals 2, Bills 3, and I think it's very close between the Jets and the Chargers and then also the Jaguars. Like, the Jaguars have the easiest division. We know they'll win their division. It's unlikely the Jets win the division. It's unlikely the Chargers win their division. The reason is the defense. Like, I think the Jaguars and the Chargers on paper have better offenses than what the Jets do have, but the Jets do have Aaron Rodgers, and you do have the reigning rookie of the year on both sides of the ball, but for an offensive conversation in Garrett Wilson, you just bring in his pal in Allen Lazard, right? You have Mecole Hardman. Like, you don't have Keenan Allen, you don't have Mike Williams, and now Quentin Johnston, right? You don't have the depth there, but you look at that defense, the Jets defense is by far and away better than the Chargers defense. And the Jets defense is by far and away better than the Jaguars defense. So if you get into some games where, let's say, the defense is just dominating the battle in the trenches, yeah, Rodgers could go out there and could go score you 21 points and go win those games. Now, we all know Justin Herbert's great. We all know Trevor Lawrence is great as well. But for me, I'm looking at it more so from the defensive side of the ball. How do you see some teams go on runs that you don't expect them to in the playoffs? A lot of times they have a kick-ass defense. Like, look at the Giants. The Giants in those two Super Bowl runs, that defense, even though Eli played well, and you got to have good play out of your quarterback, but those defenses were just dominant for the New York Giants. So that's why I would give the slight tiebreaker to the Jets over the Jaguars and Chargers, even though the Jaguars and Chargers probably have more firepower on offense. It's because the defense is that much better than the two defenses that the Chargers and the Jaguars do possess. So that's where I kind of put the Jets in at four. But I will say this. Rodgers looks happy. And in Green Bay, he was motivated, but he was motivated out of frustration. And I don't think he was happy the last few years. Like, yeah, he was happy that he got the last laugh in terms of, I won two MVPs after you drafted my replacement. But I'm telling you, this is a fact. I've said this before. Aaron Rodgers was playing games with Matt LaFleur, who a lot of people thought they had a great relationship. But LaFleur would be like, all right, let's meet more and let's find a way to incorporate you more in the planning for game plans. And Rodgers sometimes would show up, sometimes wouldn't. Like, that's not a healthy relationship. And there was so much drama in Green Bay. And I know you're going to like the media capital of the world in New York. I think it's so overblown, Rodgers and the New York media. I really do. I think the New York media is different than what it was in the early 2000s, the 90s, and the 80s. And I get it now. Everyone has a platform. Everyone looks, you know, people look for clickbait, things like that, you know, more of the salacious stuff as well. At this point, I think Rodgers at such a level where he's going to dictate those press conferences. And you've also seen the way the teams handle those press conferences too, where it very rarely becomes a circus. And I look at Rodgers, he's coming to New York now. He's embracing being like the talk of the town. He's at the two Knicks games. He's at the Rangers games. He's bringing his teammates with him, Alan Lazard, Sauce Gardner, other guys as well. I think he's really going to enjoy being at a spot where for so many years they did appreciate him in Green Bay. But at the end, internally, they didn't appreciate him anymore by trying to get his replacement in there. And now you know, like, Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh and Nathaniel Hackett's there going to be like, yes, Aaron, whatever you want. Yes, Aaron, whatever you want. And the fan base is looking at him as if he is the savior. And people know that this isn't going to be a long-term marriage. Like, maybe at most this last 3 years. I just don't see how this really gets ugly. And I don't think he's going to win a championship. But I think people expect this to be like very dramatic. And I know Rodgers associated himself with a lot of drama the last few years. I think if you're banking on the drama here, I really do believe because of the fact that Rodgers is motivated to kind of stick it to the Packers. And also he's going to enjoy being the center of attention in a big city like New York. I think they're going to get a pretty damn good version of Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers, even though I don't have him winning the division, even though I don't have him winning a Super Bowl, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to have a monster year this year for the New York Jets, Hickey.
Right now, it's all great. It's all glitz. It's all glam. He's going to every sport event, getting a standing ovation. The Mets are like trying to, you know, bang down his door to get him thrown.
Not the Yankees, though.
A first pitch.
He was annoyed about that. Yankees haven't asked him yet.
And this is what we're talking about. Now the baseball teams are fighting over each other. Now is when Aaron Rodgers is going to be loved. This is, I think, his peak time in New York. But you know it and I know living here. As soon as the losses start to come, as soon as he has a stinker in a game that he should not, people turn on you. People get upset. People get frustrated. They want to see a winner. And if the Jets don't win, especially early on, all this lovey-dovey, standing ovation, Aaron, you're the best. You could do no wrong. You're walking on water. That all goes out the window ASAP. ASAP.
I don't think so.
I think it gets ugly. And that's when I think it gets contentious between Rodgers and the fans, Rodgers and the media. There will be criticism, and it will happen very quickly.
Well, first off, I think you're just operating in how you like just read through Twitter, number one. And number two, you think the Jets are going to win 10 or 11 games this year. So how is it going to get that ugly that quickly?
I'm saying if they underperform, if Aaron Rodgers is not right now the savior, they miss the playoffs, they lose even to the Bills in week 3 and he throws 3 picks. We've seen it time and time again.
Do you think they're missing the playoffs?
No, I picked them to go to the playoffs, but I don't feel great about it. I don't think it's a lock by any stretch of the imagination.
Because the AFC is so deep. I have a tough time really seeing this turn out to being a disaster. Where like people are going to, and also whenever someone questions Aaron Rodgers, he'll just like undress the reporter too. Like, he will just go off on the reporter as well, and that will kind of put an end to it. So I think people are trying to make this out as either it's going to be all successful or it's going to be a disaster. I don't think it's going to be super duper duper successful, and I don't think it's going to be a colossal failure. I think a lot of people are overestimating how much boom and how much of a dud that this thing could potentially be.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. First half in the second quarter, Celtics up by 7 against the Philadelphia 76ers with 8:40 to go. Last night, you got to see the Miami Heat not play Jimmy Butler in Game 2, taking a 1-0 series lead, and now it's 1-1. Tonight, the Sixers did the opposite, already with the 1-1 series lead. They elected to play Joel Embiid, who was not available in Game 1. Now, Jimmy Butler was available in Game 1. That's where he got hurt. But Embiid so far in 11 minutes is 1-3 from the field, 0-1 from behind the arc, and only has 6 points and 2 rebounds in the contest. So we'll see. It's still very early, right? You got 8 minutes to go in this first half. It's an 8-point game, but it just starts to get ugly, and Embiid's on the court right now. In the second half, you wonder when they pull the plug on Joel Embiid. But Hickey, so far, it looks like Embiid is moving pretty well from what I've been able to see. I haven't seen any kind of like noticeable limp. It looks like, I know no one's 100% this time of the year, but he looks to be moving pretty well in the defensive play that I just saw.
He's able to get a block two before at the rim, so he's jumping well. He's cutting well. So far, the knee injury, he's not. Remember Anthony Davis a few years ago against, 2 years ago against the Suns when he hurt his groin and he tried to give it a go in the next game and he was out there and you knew within 10 seconds, this guy should not be on the court.
Yeah.
And he looked awful. It's the opposite about Embiid, where there's really no doubt right now that he looks like he's not ready to play. He looks good, and I think so far, Sixers, you can feel good about their decision to play him.
He almost just got posterized, too.
Now, but he's still getting up. He's running the court. Like, he looks good.
Now, they missed the dunk anyway, so I think it was Jaylen Brown who tried to just jam it down in the face of Joel Embiid. But, yeah, he's been moving around okay, so we'll see how long that leg's going to hold up throughout the rest of the series. This game is far from over. Actually, B got a hand on that. But this game is far from over. You kind of have a feeling, though. It feels there's no way the Celtics are going to drop 2 at home in the first 2 games.
I would be surprised. I think Boston will win tonight.
Especially when you have a Boston team. And Embiid said this before. It's not just the radio host saying this. Embiid even said it before. It's not a rivalry. They've owned us. When you look back at the Celtics dominance, especially in the postseason, up against the Philadelphia 76ers. Anyway, We'll do a little overreaction, proper reaction coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll do it a little NFL draft style as we'll go to that. But I'm thinking about, as we were talking earlier, who's the best player and then who's the most valuable player for each of these teams remaining. And, like, for example, I said Jalen Brunson is the Knicks' best player, but their most valuable player is Julius Randle. And you kind of saw that last night, even though there's been a lot of, I don't want to say animosity, but turbulence with the Knicks fan base and Julius Randle, where there's sometimes the effort's called into question, and there's some moments he's really good. He's like, oh, that's our guy that wanted to be here in New York. And then there's moments where you say he didn't even want to be there with the New York Knicks, and he looks like he'd want to go play for a different team. But they need Randle in this series if they're going to win. And you saw the difference when he was on the court in Game 2 compared to when he wasn't on the court in Game 1. So from a valuable player standpoint for the Knicks, and I'll go through all these. You tell me if you disagree with anyone. Julius Randle, Hickey, I think is their most valuable player if they're going to win this series.
I would still say Jalen Brunson just because I think he still brings so much to the team, especially offensively, whereas Randle's a one-trick pony. They need him to play well, don't get me wrong, but if it's who do you need to play lights-out level in order to have a chance, I will still say Jalen Brunson.
Okay, and that's fair. And I think there could be a difference from who your best player is and then who your most valuable player is. For the Miami Heat, I think this one's easy. Their best player is Jimmy Butler. Their most valuable player is Jimmy Butler as well. I know last night they were able to keep it close without him, but Jimmy Butler is one of those few guys in the NBA that could just bleep you, and he could do it by himself. And we've seen him in the Eastern Conference do it by himself before when the Miami Heat a few years ago did get to the finals. If that dude is a possessed man and is on a mission, watch out because it's very tough to try to slow him down or bare minimum get through that team very easily because you know they're going to give you everything they can. They'll throw everything at you plus the kitchen sink.
One of the few players left that could truly put the entire team on his back and lead them to winning.
The Celtics, their best player is Jason Tatum. Their most valuable player is Jason Tatum as well. And I know Jason Tatum in Game 1 had a really good showing and it just wasn't enough. You got to see Jason Tatum this postseason carry his team to a championship. I know Boston has a good team, and they have a deep roster, but Tatum needs to consistently be that dude and be that star that on any given night can just dominate the court and be the best player on the court and score like 40 a night. For me, if the Celtics are going to win a title, it's going to be because Jason Tatum's their best player and also their most valuable player.
I would actually go Marcus Smart in terms of value, just because what he brings, not only offensively, kind of running in the point and kind of facilitating for Tatum and Brown, but also defensively. You look at, okay, right now you have to put the clamps on James Harden and make Joel Embiid a one-man show. If the Celtics advance, he's going to be the matchup on Jimmy Butler. You're going to have to try to slow him down as much as you possibly can. I think from kind of both sides of the court, I would still say Marcus Smart, just because also, too, kind of to your point about Julius Randle going back to the Knicks, he is erratic, Marcus Smart, where he can have a really good game on both sides of the court. He also can be awful and be a massive detriment to you losing. I think the Celtics really need him to play at a high level, so I'll go Smart for this one.
Honestly, if I wasn't going to go Tatum, I would say for most valuable, then I would go Brown, just because he's one of the better two-way players in the league. But the Smart part, he's been a phenomenal player for them. There's no doubt about that. The Sixers, their best player is Joel Embiid. Their most valuable player is James Harden. James Harden is brought in. I know Tyrese Maxey, a lot of people have a ton of confidence in him. But James Harden had that great game the other night. You need James Harden to hit big shots when it matters the most. You know, I know that he's not going to give you 45 every night. He's capable of it. But you saw him hit that big shot in game one. If the Sixers are going to want to finally get to the conference finals, they're going to want to finally get to the NBA finals, they're going to need James Harden to be their most valuable player. I don't even think this one's up for debate.
I would agree. The Sixers, the reason why they've struggled in the playoffs is they have not closed out games well. Doc Rivers is to blame, but also, too, they haven't hit shots, and that's where James Harden absolutely comes into play.
Lakers, no one's going to debate it. Their best player is LeBron James. Their most valuable player is Anthony Davis. First off, his availability needs to be there. And secondly, I think because of how much he's been unavailable, and you had the whole street clothes things and all those lines that have been said by the NBA and TNT guys, we have reached a point where, like, a lot of people clown Anthony Davis, and it almost takes away from the fact that this dude is still one of, when he's on the court, the better players in the league, and like a top 15, top 10 player in the league when he's healthy. And he showed that last night when he put up 30 points and 23 rebounds as the Lakers do take game one. So the Lakers going to win a championship. Their most valuable player is Anthony Davis.
Oh, absolutely. They don't have a prayer if AD, you know, doesn't play well, is still inconsistent. They need him to be at an elite level throughout the rest of the playoffs, so they have no chance.
Golden State Warriors, I'm going to give you a duo here. We all know Steph is their best player, their most valuable player. You just need Wiggins or Poole, one of them, a night to show up and be that dude. Like, Wiggins was great last year at times in the playoffs. Poole was being talked about as at times as a third splash brother. And Poole has not played well. I know Wiggins is dealing with things, but we haven't seen the same Wiggins as we did last year in the postseason. So I look at both those guys. I need to see one of those guys, and they could alternate on any given night and alternate. They need to reach the level they're capable of. Wiggins and Poole.
I'll do this. I'll throw in a name into that little pool, no pun intended, to put a third name in there, of, you know, just once a game showing up. I'll say Kevon Looney, someone who grabs rebounds, who, when you look at still who's left in the West with Anthony Davis, with Nikola Jokic, you got still a lot of bigs left in the West in terms of trying to slow them down. And we saw, I mean, if he's rebounding and Steph's hitting shots, that's really all the Warriors need. That's just that little 1-2 combo of rebounding and shooting. It's tremendous. I'll throw him in the hopper, if we will, just another play to add in terms of just having to show up.
I know he did not play great the other night. They still won the game. We know Nikola Jokic, and that's not the player I was talking about. I was talking about Jamal Murray. We know Nikola Jokic, though, is their best player. Their most valuable player is Jamal Murray. Because without Jamal Murray in the lineup the last few years, we haven't looked at the Nuggets as a championship team. We've seen what he's been able to do in the big moment before. It's the same thing as Embiid. Embiid's their best player with the Sixers. Their most valuable player is obviously James Harden. It's the same thing with the Nuggets, where Joker is so great, he's their best player, but you need that complimentary piece, and Jamal Murray's back. He's their most valuable player for the Denver Nuggets.
And the deadliest part of Jokic's game is his passing, and part of the reason why the Nuggets have not been a title contender recently is because when he's passing, no one's hitting shots. Now you get Jamal Murray back in the postseason. I'm with you there.
And finally, the Suns. Best player, Kevin Durant, down 0-2. Now he needs to be their most valuable player. Durant just has to go off. He needs to give you the middle finger. He needs to take matters into his own hands and just not get embarrassed in this series. He did not shoot the ball well the other night, but now down 0-2, This isn't let's gel, let's build chemistry. Now CP3's out. We know Devin Booker is going to always hit shots. Aiden, I don't know what the heck he was doing the other game. This is now on KD to take matters into his own hands and just be an absolute menace.
Absolutely. He has to show up starting Friday night.
Zach Gilb Show, CBS Sports Radio, Celtics 47, Sixers 38, the only NBA game that is going to be played tonight, under 5 minutes to go left in this first half. Sixers did win game one with that great effort by James Harden. In hockey, Schmidt was pulled. Devils are down 3-1. Hurricanes up 3-1 heading into the third. And coming up in about 30, 35 minutes, McDavid against Eichel. Oilers, Golden Knights. Game one coming up at about 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. Zach Gilb Show, CBS Sports Radio.